This is Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Celtic Connections, the show with the Catholic view of what's happening right now in Great Britain, in Ireland, and across Europe. Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Broadcasting from Ireland.
Hello and welcome to Celtic Connections. I'm Cathy Sinnott and I'm coming to you from Cork in Ireland. Over the last 50 years in Ireland, very sadly, there's been a steady decline in vocations to the priesthood and the religious life. And this has occurred across the Western world and Ireland is no exception. But in recent years, something wonderful has happened. Religious are coming to Ireland from abroad and establishing new communities. And this began 10 years ago with the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal coming to Limerick, and then a community of them to Derry, and then the Franciscan Sisters of the Renewal came to Drogheda. Then Benedictines came to Silverstream in Meath, and Sisters from the Home of the Mother came to Sligo. Sisters from the Apostles of the Sacred Heart have recently moved to Waterford, and two salt priests are living in Donegal. Now, among the newest arrivals have been four young Dominican sisters from the community of St. Cecilia in Tennessee, affectionately known as the Nashville Dominicans, and the sisters are now living in Limerick. And remarkably, Dominicans have had a presence in Ireland since the 13th century. That's 800 years ago. So Paul Macri talked to Dominican sister, Sister Mara Grace, and she takes up the story.
The Dominican friars have been here since 1227. Almost 10 years after the establishment of the Dominican order, the friars were sent here and lived the Dominican life here in Limerick.
This is extraordinary.
Almost 800 years. And then they had to make the difficult decision to leave this past year in 2016. So when they made that announcement, the bishop wrote to our Mother Superior, Mother Anne Marie, and just asked, you know, is it possible for you to send some sisters to Limerick?
So it was Bishop Leakey's initiative?
Yes, it was.
He knew about you already?
Yes, he had heard about
us. How did he know about you?
You know, I need to get the story from him. I heard from someone else that our sisters were here for the Eucharistic Congress in 2012. One of the young ladies that entered was Irish. She came from
Wexford. Of your sister community.
One of our sisters, yes. And so she and two other sisters came over for that Eucharistic Congress and met a lot of the Irish people, had a wonderful time. And so one of the people that they met during their stay here had told the bishop, "Hey, I met these Nashville Dominicans. I wonder if they might come and, you know, be part of our diocese here in Limerick." Yeah. So the bishop invited us and Mother.
So of all the religious orders in the world,
yes,
he contacted you.
Yes, it's
Dominicans.
Pretty extraordinary.
Yeah,
and our community has a great love for the Irish people and the Irish culture. And I think St. Patrick's Day is one of the biggest celebrations in our convent.
Really?
So
does your community then have a connection with the Irish Dominicans?
Not formally. Mostly the connection is a lot of Irish heritage. So a lot of our sisters have Irish heritage. And our foundresses, while they were American, many of them either came from Ireland or their parents had been from Ireland. So there was that great love throughout for the Irish. And
But you could be mistaken for an Irish.
Well,
I could see the red hair just underneath the veil,
right,
and the freckles, and the smile.
Yes, when we first came, of the four of us that are here, one is from Ireland, and so people would ask me, "Are you the Irish one?" I was delighted.
But anyway, so this word comes from Bishop Leakey.
Yes.
Inquiring, and yes. How was that received?
And so Mother, when she read the letter from the bishop and saw that, you know, the Dominicans have been here since 1227, she thought, gosh, how could we say no to this? You know, so she came over and visited and met with the bishop and saw the diocese and to see if it would be a fit for our community.
Yeah, beautiful. So there was a process of discernment about who we would send. How did that work?
As religious sisters, we take vows, vows of poverty, chastity, obedience. And part of our vow of obedience is that we know with surety that wherever we're asked to go, that's God's will for us. And so each year we'll receive an assignment. It might be the same thing we were doing in the past or might be new.
Sure.
but this assignment, we're sent to serve in a particular place at a particular time.
Yeah.
So the four of us were chosen and sent out by Mother Anne Marie to come and serve the people in Limerick.
Beautiful. Tell us about the charism of the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia.
Yeah, we're Dominican sisters, so we follow in the footsteps of St. Dominic. And St. Dominic, you know, one of the mottos of the order is to contemplate and share with others the fruits of our contemplation. So as Dominican sisters, our first mission is mission of prayer, really. It's to be in the heart of the church, interceding for the church, for the people of God. And so our life is really built around this pillar of prayer. And then we also share with the fruits of our contemplation. So we bring that message that we've contemplated, that we've encountered in prayer. We bring the Lord to wherever we're sent, you know. So as Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia, usually we live this out, the active part of our life, in the apostolate of teaching. So we're trained as teachers. But we also do a number of works for the education of youth, and spreading the faith, bringing the faith to the people we're sent.
Certainly. So you came here exactly when?
We came August 2016. It was lovely. We were greeted by the bishop, by a Dominican friar who was here in Limerick, and by the vicar of religious for the diocese, and they welcomed us with open arms to Limerick, and we're so delighted to be welcomed with, the house was made ready for us, and all the little arrangements were made, so it was easy to come and
it's
enter.
It's quite an adventure for you,
it
I would
is
imagine.
An adventure, yes. It is an adventure. But, that's part of the religious life. That's what we live, and actually
and
every
challenge
Christian.
A challenge into the unknown, so to speak.
That's right. That's part of that vow of obedience that I don't really know what's coming, but I know it's from the Lord. It's His will. So.
Sure. Now, we would perceive, and we're told from our American friends, that a lot of the Catholic faith in North America, or the culture of Catholic faith, there's a large deposit of Irish Catholicism in it, is what we're told, because of the missionaries from long ago, and the people have been taught by Irish religious, Irish priests. And at one time, I believe half the bishops in America were Irish or had some connection with Ireland. So do you have that affinity yourself or with the other sisters, that connection with Ireland from ancestors?
Yes, definitely. All four of us that are sent here, we all have either have Irish connections, and also knew people that were Irish that influenced our own faith. One of the sister Beatrice said her brothers were all baptized by Irish priests, that were missionaries at her parish. So there is that connection very much so with the Irish culture and the Irish people.
Beautiful. Were you in Ireland before this, by the way? Did you ever visit before?
I myself never have.
Wow.
Yeah, this was the first time coming over. So same with Sister Beatrice, but Sister Rosemary had been before. And Sister Katrina, of course, is from Ireland.
Of course. Now, let's look at Ireland, because you were saying that the friars here, they were going to close this church and everything else. And there's a parish right here and the people.
Yes.
So the people were upset, I guess, because the place was going to close. And then they were praying. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. They when we first arrived, someone said, "You know why you're here? Why? Our Lady of Limerick brought you." So there was a prayer petition started to Our Lady of Limerick, who is housed in our church here at St. Xavier's. And this woman that was telling us about it, she's convinced Our Lady brought you here, so that was a great comfort
to
us. Yes, it really is.
So the local parish were praying, to Our Lady.
Yes, they didn't know what they were praying. They were praying the church kept open. And I think Our Lady provided our coming here as an opportunity to keep the parish open and keep it alive. And
so most of us haven't heard of Our Lady of Limerick. Tell us about that.
Our Lady of Limerick, I think there's also Our Lady of Galway. There might be other cities that have Our Lady, but Our Lady of Limerick is a title of Our Lady who's been invoked for centuries. There's a statue that's housed in our church that was buried at one point in history. So it's a historic statue from the 14th century, I believe that's right. But it's from pretty early on and went into hiding during the persecutions. And was brought back and reestablished, given to the Dominican order, and then set up in this church. So she's very loved and revered. There's a prayer that's to her that we say every Monday at the church. And this year we're having a triduum in her honor at the end of this month, just to give Our Lady honor and to thank her for the blessings that she's procured for this church, this parish.
Well, it's amazing that somebody was praying, a community was praying, and here you are.
Yes.
I'm speaking to Sister Mara Grace from the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia, the Nashville Sisters, who have recently moved to Limerick, and we call them now the Limerick Dominicans. Well, Sister, what does your ministry consist of here?
Yeah, we do a variety of things. The first that is most obvious is we're right next to the church. So
we're
right next here to the church.
We're right to the, yeah,
we're
to
connected.
The parish church,
so yeah. The bishop has asked that we work as the administrator of the parish. So this is kind of a new endeavor in the diocese. The diocese just had a synod last year. And part of that, there was a focus on re-looking at the church structure because, you know, the reality that the priestly age is getting higher and there's fewer and fewer priests. So they're trying to restructure a little bit. So one of those was to look at the area of church administration, whether that could be done by a layperson or non-cleric. So the bishops asked me to be the administrator of this parish, and then priests will come in from other churches to administer the sacraments. But we as sisters just do the daily running of the church.
So there isn't a parish priest as such?
There's officially one, but he is not a resident priest. So he's actually a parish priest of another church.
So they're stretched pretty thin then in the diocese, the priests, yeah.
Yes, they work hard, that's for
sure.
Yes.
Sure.
So we have four priests that will rotate coming to say Mass here, which has been so lovely and I think has brought a different kind of idea of what does it mean to be parish. You know, it's not so much now a church run by one priest and it's a territory kind of thing, but really it's a group of people of faith, you know, that come together to pray and to worship. So so we do that. We run this church here and we're act as the sacristans and, you know, have events here for the faith formation. We also help with the schools in the diocese. So one of the sisters will travel to all the primary schools of the diocese and she works as an advisor to the bishop. So she'll go and just talk with the children and the teachers and offer support for faith formation. And then we also go to two of the neighboring parish. We go to their schools and help with sacramental preparation. So then that's really what we're familiar with is school. So it's wonderful to be able to offer that service to the diocese.
Sure.
And then we kind of have an ongoing joke. There's never a normal day, you know, so we have a variety of things. I mean, even so much as just walking down the streets evangelizing, you know, it's amazing how going from one point A to point B, should be a 5-minute walk, takes 15 minutes, you know, because people are stopping away asking for prayers or advice. So
that's
part of our unplanned ministry, I guess.
Well, you know, Sister, it's sad to say, but I suppose young sisters in habit in Ireland aren't commonplace as they would have been, you know, when I was growing up.
Sure, yes.
So how are you received in that sense?
it's been so delightful. A lot of people will see us and say, oh, I feel like I'm back in grade school, you know, overall, we've received such warm reception. You know, the people are genuinely excited that we're here and have a great respect for religious. You know, we've seen the fruits of so many religious who have given their lives to serve these people and, have made such a great impact in people's lives. And so when people see us wearing the habit, they're just, oh, sister, thank you. Is there anything you need? You know, I'm so grateful. Or they'll tell us memories of their own sisters that taught them, you know. And
and
most of them are great memories that they have of the sisters. So it's been wonderful, actually, to be able to be that witness of religious life in the diocese and around Ireland. You know, we travel some doing retreats and talks and things as well.
And you were saying earlier, it sort of comes back to you that you were spotted on the bridge or
in
the car.
Right.
Tell us that story about your family in the car.
Yeah, when we were one of the first weeks we were here, you know, we got all kinds of reactions. At first, it was just kind of staring and like, am I really seeing this? But then it got to be where people were a little more used to there's nuns in town, you know. And so we'd be walking down the street. And my favorite time, we were walking down the street and this car stops and the windows go down. This car full of children said, hi, nuns. You know, it was so sweet. So it was just, there was just this great positive impression of what religious life is. And people were really genuinely excited to have it in the city.
But you mentioned as well that there's occasions of evangelization, of speaking to people about faith.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we started doing talk series and things at the parish because we realized that, a lot of people are going to Mass and going to the church to light candles, but they don't really understand what the faith teaches. You know, as we'd be talking with people, they'd ask questions. We had this realization, you know, that there needs to be some work in catechesis. Like,
of
what
course.
Is the faith?
Yeah.
So we started that formal program, but I think at the parish we'll give a lecture series, and it's basic things like, why do we go to Mass? What is confession? What's the importance of confession? What is prayer? How do we do it? You
Beautiful.
Know, just mm-hmm. basic.
So and, is this like a series of talks, like a parish mission or something that you've organized?
Something like that. Yeah, we do it. It's every other week on a Thursday night, and whoever wants to come can come.
And so do many come?
We've had, it's been a mix, so it really depends on the night.
Sure.
We've had as much as 20, and then one night there was 10. You know, so it's between 10
sure.
and 20 that come to that.
Okay.
But when we were seeing that, like, there's this need, but people aren't probably going to go to a talk, then it became let's just be present. You know, let's have a presence. And when we walk down the street, you know, if you have questions, that's the time of evangelization. And seeing the mission that way, not as so much, because I think there comes a point when if people aren't interested in the faith, they're not going to be coming to church, you know, mm-hmm. but we've got to go out to them. And I think we've really seen that we need to be able to reach people where they are. So for example, for the Our Lady of Limerick Triduum, on the last day, we're going to have an outdoor festival right outside the church. We're going to close the streets down and have games and music and food.
Wonderful.
So that people walking by will be like, what is that? And,
yeah.
and then have an opportunity to come and, see the community, and then when people come, we're going to give every person a candle to go light in the church. So hopefully drawing them to Our Lady and to the Lord. So we're trying to be creative in our ways of how do we, there's most of the people that we meet that aren't going to church, we're baptized Catholics. So how yeah. do we reach these people? And I think that's a unique situation in Ireland, actually. Like
yeah.
in America, where I grew up, the you assume people kind of believe in God. You know, I grew up in Kentucky, so you kind of have that assumption, but most people were not baptized Catholic, you know, so, but here, I mean, most were. So
sure.
it's a unique situation where they have been at least initiated in the faith, but then for one reason or another have stopped practicing. So
yeah,
how do we
yeah.
go out and re-evangelize them?
Yeah, yeah. Well, is there an openness, a hunger in people that you meet, or an indifference? Like, really, what is it like?
Yeah, I think it's a huge variety, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a deep hunger in some for true, for this authenticity, a living of the faith. Like, you know, seeing, well, these people believe one thing but practice another, you know, and they want to, there's this desire for authenticity and living the faith. And so, yeah, there's this hunger, like, what really do we believe as Catholics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we also, you know, especially among the young adult, and there seems to be also just this kind of going along with emotions and not, almost a heaviness, a darkness that they need to be wakened to desire. So I think we see that as an area where we need to really pray about how is the Lord calling us to reach them, especially on the university campus, and how do we ignite this desire for?
Have you been to the university campus?
We have we're invited to speak at Mary Immaculate College
yeah.
and gave a talk there, and then we've kind of just walked around a little bit on the campus. There's
yeah.
a couple colleges here.
And how was that received? Because sometimes students can be quite cynical.
Yeah, you know, the first time we came, it was like people would look at us and pretend like they weren't, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't really want to engage. But then as we had one of the professors invited us to his class, and so we got to be with the students and, you know, just talk with them, and you realized, oh, they're kind of normal people, you know?
Sure.
And that really was a huge turning point. So the next time
yeah.
we went to campus, people actually said hello, or, you know, so we did find a difference. And once that personal connection is made,
yeah.
it really, it enables the young people sure. to have that comfort to.
Well, sister, is there any instances you can share with us without betraying confidences, just even generally, if you want, of people you've encountered who something has stirred in them in the faith and come back to the faith perhaps?
Yes, I I really think, I mean, I've seen miracles this year.
And you mentioned that. So yeah, tell us
I really have. And I'll just share one in particular. There's when we first came, we did kind of an American thing. Looking back now, I realize how embarrassingly American we are. But we put out kind of an altar call and said, if anybody wants to volunteer, we need help. So we at Mass, you know, we just went on to the AMBO and asked, you know, we need help, we need cleaners, because we really didn't have any, you know, there were very few things set up for us in the church. So the three of us were looking at each other, like, how are we going to do all this? You know, so we're like, well, let's ask for volunteers. So we did that, and we didn't get, you know, we got a little bit of a response, but somebody, we were still looking for somebody to help clean the church. And so someone mentioned, oh, you should go talk to this woman. So we asked her to come clean the church, and she really, you know, she was not in the habit of coming to Mass, and she was like, I'll come clean, you know, I'll do that. Well, then...
just don't ask me to go to Mass.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first time, you know, I was cleaning with them, and she got a group of friends together. So we were all talking after cleaning and having a cup of tea, and they just started asking questions about the religious life. So I had that curiosity. Well, then, you know, the next time it was a little bit more, they would apply to themselves in the faith. And well, why do we need to go to, you know, those basic questions, like, why does the church believe this or whatever? And then it became, well, we're going to offer this event if you want to come. So then she started coming to these events, and it became every single thing we were doing, the adoration, from adoration to talks to whatever events we were having, she was there. And,
beautiful.
And it became this like desire to really enter into the church's life, the beauty of her life. And then we were having a talk on confession, and she came up to us and she's like, sisters, I don't know if I can do this, you know, too scared. And we just, you know, so like quietly encouraged her, kind of joking, and yeah, you'll feel much better, you know. But she, praise God, she went. And I mean, the transformation in her life, it's been so beautiful just to walk with her in that. And I've felt so privileged to see the Lord working really, really deeply in her soul.
Beautiful.
It's been beautiful. So that's just one instance of many different we've seen, but sure, that one sticks out to me.
Sure. Well, sister, you talked about the students and evangelization. Now, in Ireland too, there's issues that are hot button issues. The life issue at the moment.
You know,
our constitution protects the unborn. There's moves in the government and to try to change that, to compromise that. We've had the same-sex marriage referendum, the gender issue, and all this sort of political correctness. Has that impacted you in the sense of the conversations or people you meet? I'm thinking maybe the students.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's especially we've gone to they have a great thing, Youth 2000 here, that there's these retreats, and so we've gone to several of those, and especially at those, they're grappling with these questions, and even actually at we were at some meeting the other night for the diocese, and there was this frustration about we don't have words to answer when people ask us about these questions. Like there's this yearning for, we want to support the church, but we need help, you know?
Very
so
good.
I think that's been wonderful to see, and a great area of development that we can have as church here in Ireland of how do we supply for the normal everyday churchgoer the words to be able to answer and to stand up for the faith, so that the media is not dominated by the other voice, you know, that's trying to do away with all these things that we know are good and true and beautiful. So I've definitely encountered a lot of that, just the desire to want, but then also to the confusion of, well, why do we say that we need to protect life? You know, why can't we allow abortion? So there, I think there's confusion, but I think with that comes a desire to really have an understanding of why the church teaches what she does, why human life is so precious, and why we need to protect all human life, you know, from conception to natural death. I've definitely encountered that, especially among the young that are grappling with these questions. They're, you know, now away from their parents, and they're like, well, how do I respond? I don't have my mom and dad to fall back on.
Yeah. Well, sister, I'm delighted to hear you say that, because, you know, at EWTN as well, we're developing our project here, our mission with radio and television. Mm. And one of the things that occurs to me, that with all these issues, these hot button issues, the life, the gender, and also, you know, the poverty or refugees or whatever the issue may be, it's maybe arrogant to say, but we have the answer to all of that.
We do.
And the answer is Christ.
Yes.
And it's articulating that.
Yes.
It's Christ in the public square. It's not like we need to avoid these questions. We have a response.
Yes.
And it's always a response in charity and in love for the poor struggling human being, which we all are, you know? So it sounds like you're prepared for those questions and welcome those questions to be able to help people, to equip them to respond.
And you know, I think an advantage too is in America we've grappled with these, and unfortunately, some of them have gone the wrong way. You know, so we've had to be
able
to
develop. You've been in that fray for a long time in America.
Yes, yes. So it's been wonderful in America that they've developed some of these resources of how do we talk about these things, because I think a lot of people have the idea of the church of it's just a blind faith. You know, we just believe, but we don't think.
Yeah.
And that's totally not true.
The faith, you know, and nobody's heard about the reason.
Exactly. And they go together. You know, the faith is very reasonable.
Yeah.
And actually, it's more certain than our reason can grasp, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So, and I think the church has a great gift to offer. We just need to make that available to everybody to be able to talk reasonably about our faith and what
we
believe.
That's right. I'm speaking to Sister Mara Grace from the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia, the Nashville Sisters, who have recently moved to Limerick, and we call them now the Limerick Dominicans. Well, Sister, you know, you hinted on it earlier, and there is, I think everyone in the church agrees, there's been a deficit with catechesis in Ireland. It's almost like the Irish, we're very devotional, you know. Divine Mercy is very popular in Ireland.
Yes.
Padre Pio, you know, they had the charismatic renewal, various things are. But when it comes to, you know, the sort of understanding the faith, the catechesis, we really have been very, very weak. So it's wonderful that you're here and you're bringing all of this, in a sense, to Ireland. And we've noticed that there seems to be orders coming to Ireland of more recent years, like yourself, sort of missionaries, if you will.
Yes.
So we have the Benedictines in Silverstream.
Yes.
We have the House of the Mother. Beautiful young sisters from Spain. Well, they're Irish, but the order, I believe, is from Spain. And we have, of course, the Franciscan friars and sisters of the Renewal, two communities of friars and sisters. And actually, we have a couple of salt priests up in Donegal.
Oh, okay.
And then you mentioned today about in Waterford. Mm-hmm. What were the sisters?
The Apostles of the Sacred Heart.
Yes, young sisters from America as well.
Yes, and they also came in August.
Yeah, yeah. And several of them that I've spoken to speak of, you know, the faith they received from Ireland or through the Irish in times past. And several of them have said to me, well, there's a sense of coming back and bringing the faith back to Ireland that we received.
Yes.
Is there a sense of that for you as well?
Oh, definitely, yes. And that was when Mother asked us to come. That was her first thing. She said, "Sisters, the Irish have given us so much, and you're going to give back to the Irish." She said, "Go and learn, go and be, and just go and live the faith there." You know, that's the most important thing is being able to give back to the Irish who've given so much to us.
Yeah,
and I really myself felt. A great privilege in being sent to do that, you know, that a culture who's been so generous. I mean, the sisters and priests that we meet that have been all over the world. You know, I met this sister who served in Alabama and then in Africa, and then now she's finally back for her retirement, you know, and so it's so inspiring to me to see all these missionaries. And so the little we can do to come back and just thank them for that gift, you know, it's a great privilege that we have.
It's beautiful. Well, it's certainly from our perspective, it seems that the Holy Spirit is doing something in the sense of bringing these wonderful visitors to Ireland, and particularly from North America. You see, we've 5 million people on Ireland. The majority of them would be baptized Catholics. But you've got, you know, 60 million Catholics in North America. That's as many people there are in Great Britain. So, you know, in Ireland, we're never going to win the World Cup. We're a small country. So you've got this wonderful, large population. And that's why EWTN, I think, exists, because of, you know, North America and the culture, too, who will help support the mission of something innovative like EWTN, whereas the Irish, if we're supporting something, we don't think of media. We give it somewhere in the third world, which is great.
Uh-huh.
But this is a mission too, you know, the media, so to speak.
Yes.
But one of the things, sister, that I've observed, and I'll be interested in your comments, is if you study the life and times of St. Malachy, and during that time, he became the Archbishop of Armagh, reluctantly.
Mm.
And Ireland was in a very difficult position because the Irish, the Celtic Church was disconnected from Rome.
Mm.
The Irish were going back to their pagan ways.
Mm.
There were lay people in charge of the abbess positions in the communities. And family life and everything was diminishing. Enter St. Malachy.
Mm.
And he connected the church then back to Rome, and his travels back and forward and his friendship with St. Bernard.
Mm.
And that opened the doors then for the Dominicans and the Franciscans and others, a short time later, to come to Ireland. Foreigners, like St. Patrick, foreigners coming to Ireland. And I often think of St. Patrick coming to Ireland with his foreign accent. If he was an Irishman, it would like, who do you think you are? Like? But a foreigner coming is, well, come on down, sit down, tell us where you're from and tell us your story and have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit the Irish love to, you know, a visitor.
Yes.
You know? And so the hope is, I suppose, that something of that's happening now again.
Oh, yeah.
Where these wonderful visitors are coming, and visitors that are connected to us from our ancestors who've gone out and preached the gospel to you.
Yes. You know? I think there's a lot in that. And when we first came, especially, there was a lot of, now, do you have Irish connections? You know, there's always that looking for how we connected. And I think the Irish have a great gift of hospitality and welcome. I really do. I mean, when we came, bent over backwards, you know. And but I think you're right that the church is universal. And, you know, I think if we get too isolated and this is who we are as a little local church, we forget that there's gifts all over that are, you know, the Holy Spirit is breathing all over the earth, and we need each other to help live out the faith. And so I think, you know, I personally have experienced that with missionaries in America coming there. And there were different ones from Latin America that really were pivotal in my vocation. And so I think every church in every age, we need each other to help see that, you know, our home really is in heaven.
That's right.
And it calls us out of ourselves. And it's, for me personally, it's been wonderful to be in a different culture. And my faith has been so enriched by seeing the faith here. And you, the Irish might not be able to see the strength of the Irish church in a way that an outsider can come and see, wait, you have these gifts, you know?
Well, could you tell us about that? What do you observe that we wouldn't necessarily see? Could you articulate that?
You mentioned one, the devotional life has been so beautiful to see. That, you know, we, in America where I grew up, the churches would just open for Mass and that was it. But here, I'll go into the church at any given time and people are going in and making a visit to the Lord. So the reverence and the beauty of, like, seeing the church as a really sacred place has been beautiful. I also see great gifts in loyalty. The Irish are very loyal, you know, so if they are on your side, you are okay, you know,
sure.
And I think that's a great gift to give to the church, that standing up for the faith. I mean, the number of martyrs of the Irish church is incredible.
Sure.
So I think that's a great gift that the Irish church has. And I think there's also a natural virtue in Irish families. You know, I've been so impressed here by the number of families you'll see, like dads and sons and daughters and mothers all together. And it's something that I think has been attacked in a bigger way in America. You know, you don't see as many fathers playing with their children, and especially. And so that's been really beautiful to see. Even the simple things of, you know, we go to a car park at Tesco and there's family parking. You know, I'm like, this is beautiful. It's a pro-family culture, you know. And so I think there are great gifts there that could be capitalized on and really nurtured and strengthened even more, you know, as an example for the world of
this
is what family living is.
That's right. And it's, you know, the Irish culture is interwoven very much with the faith.
Mm, yes.
And a lot of that is, you know, a fruit of the faith.
Yes.
The Irish character in that sense. And we love family and we love children.
Yes.
And we love vulnerable people.
Yes.
I think Ireland gives more to charity per capita than practically any other country.
Wow.
You know, so there is a great generosity of spirit in that sense, you know.
Yes, very much.
So tell us about the development of your mission here. Where do you think it's going to be going, or what's going to happen? Do you have any sense of that?
That's a great question. It's It's really hard to say. I feel like we're on an adventure with the Lord, you know. Yeah. What is he calling us to? I can see the need for the Dominican charism to share the faith with others. I think there's a hesitancy that we've seen to even talk about the faith. You know, it's a very personal thing. And so I think I can see our mission moving more towards that of how do we evangelize and help others to evangelize and share the faith. And we'll see what form that takes. But
that's very interesting. So you feel a call more to direct evangelization.
I think, a formation and helping other people to do it, I think.
So not just evangelization, but
formation of the, the sisters and I have been talking about, okay, let's look at the year and, you know, what's happened and where do we see ourselves going? And all of us have come to, like, there needs to be a sense of walking with people in the faith, like informing them, you know. So, and actually when we first came, this group of young people came to us and said, "Sisters, can you start some kind of young adult group? We really want to just know what
coming
the faith is."
Coming from the
is.
Young people themselves.
Yeah, coming from them themselves.
How beautiful.
So we started a women's night that we meet monthly and just focused on that, just human formation. You know, who are we as human beings? What makes us distinct from animals, for example? And what are we called to? Living virtuous lives. How do we grow in virtue? So it's been, you know, basic human formation, but they've been eating it up, you know, because there's this, I haven't ever heard this before. I don't know this. So, you know, the truth resonates, you know, it speaks for itself. So we see a need for that to continue to walk with people and help with formation, not just human formation, but in the faith and passing that on to others.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, as I say, sister, certainly from our perspective in Ireland, with these wonderful communities coming to Ireland, and hopefully that's been accelerated in recent years. I think maybe the Holy Spirit stirring other communities around the world, maybe in North America, religious communities, ought also to come to Ireland in the sense of mission. What would you say to maybe religious who are listening to this, maybe religious superiors who are listening to this in your experience, if that's something that's on their radar stirring in them?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Like I mentioned earlier, when you're doing the will of God, it's amazing the fruits that he shows us. And I would say for any religious that's considering coming abroad, especially to Ireland, I think the Lord has his eye on Ireland in a special way right now.
Really?
I do. I sense that.
So it's interesting you should say.
Yes,
that.
I mean, even in the fact that the Holy Father's chosen this as the place to come for the next world meeting, of families. You know, I think
it's a fervent desire of his to come here.
That's right. Yeah, and we're all hoping too. Yeah. So I think this is a special moment for the Irish. I think with the, you know, even in the political sphere, there's a lot of crucial decisions right now. So it's a hinge moment, you know, the Irish culture can go one or the other way. And so I think, you know, if the Lord's calling, putting a stirring in the hearts of religious to come to Ireland, you know, if he really is calling you here, you know, be courageous, because, you know, I remember when I was asked to come, I worried about, oh, the weather is going to be too cold and dark and rainy, you know, but all of those things like disappear. And really Ireland has become a true home. My heart is here.
Really,
you know,
in such a short time.
Yes, I think so.
How beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's the grace of the Lord, you know, only he could give that. And so if he's calling missionaries here, he's going to give that missionary grace, you know, and
sure.
So yeah, and it has to be from the Lord, you know. There,
of course.
So the Lord's will is that's when we thrive and we're able to really be effective in proclaiming the gospel. So for those religious that are considering, I would say, really pray and discern, and if he is calling, you know, be courageous, and there will be a welcome here.
Certainly. And I suppose we should be talking to our own bishops here, that because the invitation needs to come always for our religious to come.
Yeah, it probably depends on the community, but that's certainly for ours. We need to come from the bishop.
Yeah.
So,
because I know Bishop Fonzie in Waterford, it was he that invited the sisters to come there.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, that's
it
right.
Works that way. I'm speaking to Sister Mara Grace from the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia, the Nashville Sisters, who have recently moved to Limerick. Well, Sister, tell us about your personal walk of faith. Have you always been strong in the faith, or have you taken the scenic route like myself?
Yeah, I actually was baptized in a Protestant church, the Methodist church.
Oh, really?
And yes, we kind of church hopped when I was little, so we were Protestant. We mostly went to Protestant churches, and then when I was younger, when I was about 7, my mom passed away, and my dad a year later married a Catholic, and so we all came into the Catholic church. But I mean, for me, it was another church.
This is what we do rather than some great Damascus moment.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like, okay, we're just going to try out another church, you know? And we were faithful. We would go on Sundays. We were faithful about going on Sundays, but it wasn't really something we talked about or.
Well, did you go through the sacramental? Did you?
You know, I was in second grade at that time. So I would meet one-on-one with a religious sister and learn the faith that way. And then made my first communion right before their wedding.
Okay.
So I did go through some classes. But, you know, it was also at a time when the teaching of the faith was a little bit, I don't remember, I may have, but I don't remember learning that Jesus was truly present in the Eucharist, you know, for example. So really for me, it was just another step of another journey along the way. But when I was post-primary school and secondary school, I got involved with our parish youth group. Mainly actually because they were going on trips like ski trips and things like that. And I thought that would be fun. But my parents didn't let me just go on trips. I had to go to the meetings too. So I started going to these youth group meetings. And it was there that I finally found a community to belong to, that we had fun together and that we had something in common. We were all Catholic. But eventually that became a place where I identified myself with, you know, these were people I identified myself with, and there was something about them that I really enjoyed being with them, but I couldn't identify what that was. And then we went when I was in, like 14 years old, I went on my first retreat, and I really didn't know what that was. I was kind of scared. I was like, I don't know what retreat is, but it was a time I could have a weekend away from my family. So I was like, that'll be fun. So I went on this retreat, and at the retreat, they had Eucharistic adoration, which is the first time I'd ever experienced that. And the climax was when the priest would come around with the monstrance, with Jesus, the Blessed Sacrament, in the middle of the monstrance, and came to each person at the retreat. There were probably 800 to 1,000 young people my age. So he came around to each of us, and we had this one moment when we were face to face with the Lord in the Eucharist. And it was kind of a charismatic, so there were people that were laughing and crying, and so I was a little frightened, and I was like, what's going to happen to me when that's in front of me, you know? I'm like, I don't know if I want this. So I was a little nervous, and I remember really praying for the first time, like, Jesus, please don't make me look stupid. Like, that was my prayer. So when I was right in front of the Blessed Sacrament, it was almost as if no one else was in the room, and I had this moment of grace that I knew that was Jesus and that he had a plan for my life. And I couldn't put that in words, but it was this surety that he has something for me. So I think that's where the seeds of my vocation really lie. And then my life after that became this quest for more of the Lord. Like, I had this experience. I want this all the time. So I became a retreat junkie and would go on all these retreats. And well, finally, my dad found a retreat when I was 16 years old. He said, I found a retreat for you in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's at a convent. And I was like, oh, you know, I didn't really know sisters. Like, my first communion instructor was the only one I really had known. And I just thought they were all old and grumpy, you know, so I was really scared. I'm like, what is this going to be like? Mm-hmm. But going on the retreat was such a beautiful experience. The first thing that I saw when we drove up was this field of sisters in runners playing soccer, you know, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a different weekend than I thought. But just the joy the whole time was so beautiful. So that was when I was 16, but then I decided, oh, I could be this. I could be a sister, you know. Then I got back home. I was like, no, I want to get married. So it became this battle kind of inside, like, I really want this. I really want this. And it wasn't until I was 20 years old that I finally asked the Lord, what do you want? You know, and when I finally opened up to that question, I really felt this peace and this call to enter the Nashville Dominicans. And so I entered that summer when I was 20, and just I mean, it was the Lord just opened the doors wide to me, and it made it very clear that this was His will, and whole way paved with peace. So that was kind of my journey. So this gradual coming to the faith, but then He definitely led me along the way.
Beautiful. And then you opened your eyes, and there was Limerick.
And there was Limerick.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Sister, you're here with three other sisters. Could you just tell us briefly who they are and a little bit about each one of them?
Yes. So Sister Beatrice, she grew up in Seattle, Washington. It's unique. She has a brother who's a Dominican and a sister who's a Dominican in our same community. So she's seven siblings. Three of them are Dominicans. And Sister Beatrice helps out here at the parish and also helps with the confirmation class.
Where's she from?
From Washington, Seattle, Washington. And then Sister Rose Miriam, she's from California, from Southern California. She worked some before she was a sister, and then she has four siblings. This summer she'll be making final vows with our community. And then the fourth is Sister Katrina, who grew up in Wexford here in Ireland. She also has four siblings, and she helps work here at the parish. She helps with sacramental preparation.
When did you go to America?
She left 5 years ago. So she went to America, almost six now. She lived in America for 5 years and then came over to Limerick. And left here not knowing she'd ever come back. You know, that was not really in her radar. So what a gift when she was able to come back and be here with her own people.
Beautiful. And Sister, a very rude question. What would be the average age of you sisters?
The four of us together? Yeah. Okay, let me see.
Approximately.
Oh, gosh, about 33, 34. We're all within... like 5 years of
beautiful
each other.
Young sisters. It's amazing. Well, sister, you're so welcome, and I'm delighted to speak to you.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll speak again with at AWTN.
I hope so. Thank you so much for your
God
time.
Bless you, sister. God bless. Thank you.
You're listening to Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Celtic Connections is the only show made in the UK or Ireland with the Catholic view of what's happening in Great Britain, Ireland, and across Europe. Stay tuned for more Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott.
Recently, I attended an international Fatima Centenary Conference in Galway, and there I heard wonderful young singing quartet called Aquila. And of course, Aquila means eagle in Latin. And I have to say, their talent absolutely blew me away, and I'm sure the rest of the conference felt the same way. So I managed to track down the two female members of Aquila, and we had a chat about their music, and they sang for me. So here's that interview, and please forgive my very hoarse voice, but at least I know the sound of Aquila will more than make up for my croaking voice. So I want to introduce you to two girls, Anna Smith and Victoria Smith, who are first cousins.
Yeah.
We also had William Smith, who is Victoria's brother, and a good friend, Anthony McGorgan. So Anna, welcome.
Thank you.
You have a great gift. The Lord has given you all a great gift.
Thanks.
How would you describe, what's the style that you're singing?
Well, it's liturgical, but it's classical, lovely classical liturgical pieces, many that people know, and also my cousin Victoria and Williams, their father, he's a composer, so he writes some really beautiful liturgical classical pieces, so that's really what we're focusing on performing at the minute.
Maybe you could tell us, Victoria, about the two pieces yesterday that your father had composed.
Yeah, it was the Ave Maria and the Our Father.
Yes.
It was, yeah.
Do you know what's beautiful about them for me? Is I love the Ave Maria, you know, the very famous one, which you also sang so beautifully. Just beautiful. But I found that the two, the Our Father and the Ave Maria that your father had composed, I not only thoroughly loved it and was moved by it, but I was able to pray it.
Wow.
Listening to it, I really felt I was praying it. And that's a great gift. It wasn't just dramatic and impressive, but it was prayerful.
Yeah. Well, he actually composed the Ave Maria as a lullaby almost, as in like Our Lady rocking you over to sleep. So it's really quite peaceful and prayerful.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that must have been it, you know.
Yeah.
And I was trying, because it was getting late, I was trying to get my rosaries finished while I was listening to you, and it just was perfect. It just fit in. But I'm just wondering, would you ever sing a little bit for us, just so that the listener can maybe get some taste of what we really enjoyed yesterday?
Yeah, but it probably won't be as nice, because we don't have any music back in us.
Well, you don't have William.
Yeah.
And you don't have Anthony, but...
Yeah, we give it a go and see.
Sure. Here we go. Wonderful. And that's the Hail Mary we were talking about, that your father wrote, that is just so prayerful.
Yeah.
Just, you know, absolutely prayerful and very, very touching.
Thank you
so much. I understand you haven't really been recorded before.
No, we haven't really, no.
And I hear you're going to Walsingham this summer to do some recording with EWTN.
Yeah, we hope so. So that's something really to look forward to.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great. Well, I look forward to hearing it as well and watching it. I'm sure people listening will be very, you know, when are those people going to be on again? So before you start, can you introduce what you're going to sing?
So what we're going to sing is another piece by Victoria's dad, Uncle Bernard. He wrote a beautiful piece about our Lord's death, and it's called The Green Hill Far Away.
The Green Hill Far Away,
yeah.
Beautiful. Okay.
There was a green hill far away, without a city wall, where the dear Lord was crucified. And I too save us all. We may not know, we cannot tell what pains he had to bear.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to Anna and Victoria Smith, And of course, you haven't mentioned, you have a name for your group.
Yeah, we do actually, yeah. The name is Aquila.
And what does that mean?
It means eagle in Latin, so.
We sort of based it on St. John the Baptist, you know, to protect us and help us, you know, trying to sing.
Aquila.
Aquila.
Aquila. Yeah. Aquila. Thank you so much, and we'll be looking forward to hearing a lot more from Aquila.
I hope so.
You have been listening to Celtic Connections with Cathy Simon. Join Cathy Simon next time for more Celtic Connections.